You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Lior Chemerise. Lior, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hey, I'm happy to be here.
Lior, we're going to talk about your films today. And to begin with, what is it that you're working on at the moment?
Right now, I'm preparing an episodical work, actually, like a long-form episodical film project. I call it The Present Now. It's a working title. I might change it. It's about, I live in LA now, and it's about performance artists in LA. It's about an artist space in a gentrifying area that gets, there is a certain incident there, and there are certain people dead. And my story is about, like, it's a periphery of a peripheral scene, perhaps, and the story of these people, basically their lives, in the same time that there's the question of who did this incident, an attack of sort, like who's responsible for it, but more focusing really on these people's lives and their art and the dead person's art, one in particular.
That's what I'm doing now.
I'm sorry. Yes.
No, that sounds very powerful, and it sounds also quite narrative. It's not as experimental as some of your previous work, or is it?
No, I mean, I think my work is always both, I think, narrative and experimental or conceptual or playful with form. And I think this one is going to be just as much. I mean, of course, there is a specific story. The art is going to be part of the work. So I think that's already, and the performance art would be part of the work. I'm still trying to find the precise angle in which the art of the space and the story of the space, how they are meeting and how they present themselves. Because the story is about spaces, I think, in a way, in a very basic way. It's about different kinds of spaces and how these spaces are used by different kind of people, in the sense of more commercial spaces and spaces that present themselves perhaps as non-commercial, but maybe they play a pivotal role within capitalist economy. So it is about the spaces, but the art is also about the person in space in a way. And
we could call it an art film, but it's that on a few layers, because you're talking about performance artists, which is a form that I interview performance artists and people who are used to that form, but a lot of people don't know much about what a performance artist is or what a performance artist does, which is actually something that defies categorization and definition easily, because performance artists, unlike actors, do all kinds of different things. You know, actors.
I come for it from a very specific angle. I come for it. It's good that you say that, because, I'm not giving a portrait of what it is on the wide scale. I'm coming to it from a very specific scale to tell my story, and my story has to do with persons in spaces. So my performance art would be also through this prism, you know. It's not, of course, it's like visual art. It's like, of course, there's all kinds of people doing all kinds of different stuff.
To talk a little bit about your story from the beginning, you studied film at the Jerusalem Film School and later studied experimental media design, but it's hard for me not to ask. I know you, when you began studying film school, you were also expelled from that school in 2004. Do you mind me asking why you were expelled? That seems like it must have been a formative experience.
Yeah, I didn't quite fit in, I guess. I went to film school. You know, I left. I'm coming from a small town in Israel called Ashkelon, and I didn't really go to the army like most people do. I left pretty early, and I went to the city, and for a few years I didn't go to any university. I just experimented. You know, I made art magazines with friends. I made experimental films with friends, performance, music, this kind of stuff. And at some point, it was sort of a feeling of a failure. Okay, I give up. I'm going to join your institution system. And I went to a film school. And this is a very commercial film school in Israel. It has its prestige of sorts. I say of sorts because of my perspective on that school. But it's this kind of like, you know, point plot school. Imagining that the visual form is just, there is only one way of telling a story, and it's the invisible way, I guess. And it's just, I find it is a way of assuming that power is nature, maybe. I hope it doesn't sound too abstract. But there were just two commercials. Like, I was interested at that time in experimenting in form, in asking how, for example, how production engraves a value system inside the film, how it's not only the story you're telling. I guess that's obvious to a lot of people. It's not only the story you're telling, it's also how you tell the story, how you produce it, who are the people you're working with, who puts the money, what's the conditions for that. And it's not necessarily because there's some evil people who want a specific thing, but rather because there are certain systems that create a certain, let's call it a feeling of a work or a message of a work, and ideology, if you want to sound old-fashioned. So that's cool. I was there for years, and I did take certain things, and I find people that I later kept collaborating with also. But it was obvious that it wasn't a good fit, you know? Yeah, I would take my video camera. They would all shoot in film, and after they had the script approved, and I would go with my video camera and experiment in the house of friends. And then I went back to the city, to Tel Aviv, and I worked there for another 2 years and did, like, independent work, basically, by myself. So, yeah, and with friends and actors and people around. Then I went to Berlin in 2006, and this was the media department of the Berlin University of Art. And I think there I was also a little bit on the narrative side of a very, of an art school where people made a lot of conceptual work. But I felt, I think, more comfortable too. I kept doing my work. I did long films through school. Like, I did three long films, like 65, 90 minutes, another 65, and a lot of short films.
Like Japan, you made when you were at that school.
Yeah, I mean, I shot it by myself, but I edited it during my first year there. And then I shot Southern Returns there.
So I want to talk about those films, but to talk about also your early life in Israel. You said you weren't in the military. I thought that was mandatory in Israel, that you had to be in the military, that it wasn't a choice.
Yeah, I went for a little bit and I got discharged. I mean, it's mandatory. I mean, I didn't break any law, but I got discharged from the film school, the same story maybe.
That's interesting. I didn't see it either. Like film school, so in a way.
Yeah,
they
shook my hand. The guy, I had a really nice, whatever. I had a really good profile, and they were like, "Okay, you're gonna be a pilot. You're gonna be a commander, whatever." Yeah, I didn't fit in. Let's say it this way. I mean, service in Israel is in a very it's a specific kind of service at the moment, unfortunately. And in service of a specific kind of force, and not having to take part in that.
And so, similar to film school, maybe as you say, to use a kind of an old term, it was an ideology you didn't conform to or believe in.
Yeah, of course. But I didn't. Well, I mean, I didn't break any law or anything.
Well, in
they
United
called me
States,
a narcissist. They said I was a narcissist, and it was also back then. You know, if you were a gay, it was not so. Yeah, so if you're gay and they call you a narcissist,
right?
Yeah,
right.
They bring your parents and they tell them, yeah. But yeah, I mean, of course,
So that's formative in a way too, because I mean both of those things. You grew up in an environment that shaped you in a number of ways, but also as someone who didn't fit the typical profile of someone who moves in, you know, with certain conservative ideas or certain ideologies. It sounded like you had a strong enough sense of yourself and your own, let's say, vision. That it separated you from other people right away, or it was recognized that you weren't going to just march in step, whether it was film school.
Yeah,
or
I want to believe that it's not just about. I mean, I want to believe that it's not just about fitting in the sense of we can eventually all fit in and everything will be we will be part of the machine and then everyone will be happy. So I think in that sense. Of bringing people into the system is not necessarily how I would find the right way forward. The system is problematic. It's great to bring people into the system. You know, I'm very happy when the system accepts people who were not accepted before. For example, queer people. But if the system is the problem, you have to. Yeah, I mean. You have to acknowledge that. And I think, yeah, I mean, military service, I came to philosophy when I was very young. I think when I was 13 and 14, I started reading into Western and Eastern philosophies. And I think when I was 18, I felt enough, I think, at distance to not buy into a certain headspace, I think. And I saw people, and of course it distanced me from the people I grew up with, most of them. But it's one of the things I'm most proud of, I think I did in my life. So yeah.
Most so proud in the sense and I, most proud of no, that's good to mention. So the thing that you're most proud of is the fact that you
something
that
I
you,
did
that
not
you
do.
Didn't adapt to the system. Right. I like that. Well,
but it's true also for I mean I you know, I moved here I lived in Berlin and now I moved here to LA and I'm kind of living within a certain system of picture making, you know, and it's easy, I think, to be tempted to think that this system can be just adjusted and then I would fit in. I mean, I think a lot of people tend to buy into that belief, I think, especially today. And I think it's important to keep remember, that there is an alternative, that there are different ways to approach visual cultures, and that these ways are wise and they're versatile and they're powerful and they liberate us and they give us freedom and liberty and maintain our independence. And I think I keep having to remind myself that occasionally here, especially I'm not. Yeah, I'm making films. I'm not making visual art, and I'm not a performance artist. So my form art is like telling stories with pictures. And of course, these stories, yeah. I mean, so I myself have to remind myself the past and, yeah, what I believe in, I guess.
I like that. And so let's talk about you know, some of the things you mentioned earlier and other ways of moving in the world. There's also, of course, how things are produced, how things are funded, who funds them, and who distributes them. So to talk about your first featurette, Japan, that was done earlier in your career, you say that was produced with a micro budget, yet it went to, you know, an enormous amount of film festivals. What does that mean, a micro budget? I always wonder, like, what does that term actually mean? Is there
a... No budget. It means I'm in Tel Aviv. I got expelled from film school. I'm doing film projects with friends. I'm not like, I'm not doing anything, but I really want to do this film. And I'm not sure exactly who would give me money, and I just do it. So I have this little mini DV. It's 2006. It's a Panasonic little mini DV I bought for $1,000, and I just shoot. And it means shooting at people's houses and shooting with friends, this kind of stuff. No crew at all, just me. Luckily, it's Hebrew, so it's subtitled. So sometimes you would notice how bad the sound quality is. That's a micro budget, and then it goes to all these festivals. You know, it goes to Locarno, it goes to the MoMA, it goes to all these gay film festivals in the States, around the world, and I do get a lot of distribution offers. And unfortunately, which was also for me when I did that film, because I went to film school, I knew what I'm allowed to and not allowed to do. I wasn't ignorant of copyright laws, for example. But I decided I do this movie and I don't think at all about distribution, and that meant that there were a lot of it was impossible to do.
So let's talk about how that moves forward then. So then I'm sorry, you what?
Yeah, just because of music, there were like pop songs there, and there were like video clips from TV shows. There were all these things that just cannot be cleared for copyright.
What did you do? What did you do when there's copyright issues like that? Well, then what do you do? Because that's
festivals don't care. Usually, yeah.
They don't care about copyright issues. It's more if it's distributed.
Yeah. Also not. Yeah.
And so let's talk about moving forward from there. In your later films, like Beyond Love and Companionship, was there now a budget? And if so, where did that budget come from? No, there still wasn't a budget.
No, but you know, I did a lot of short films and a bunch of long films. And sometimes, like if we talk about production, sometimes when I was in Germany, there is a little bit more money for experimental work, and sometimes you could get some money, maybe 20, 30, 40,000 to make a movie, even if you don't have a script, and if you say that part of your work process is improvisation and is some sort of holistic approach to the picture making. So some of these films did get funding, but specifically Beyond Love and Companionship is a film I made because my friend was visiting and I wanted to make a film with her, and we just shot it also without a budget. It did go to win a prize in Oberhausen, and which meant that the TV station bought it and they like screened it, ZDF and Dreisat in Germany. So it was shown on TV and it got it got prizes, but this was also a really no budget. It's me with the camera and the sound recordist and then the actors, which sometimes I don't always work
so,
like
so,
that. I also
so,
work
so,
with
so the crew is really two people. And in that case of Beyond Love and Companionship, the crew is two people, other than yourself and the sound person, other than the actors.
Yeah, I work, you know, sometimes I did work with bigger crews of like 10, 15 people but there are also advantages to working with a small crew. And this is, of course, the intimacy you get with the actors. And I think you can see it in the films. And for example, there's another film I made, L'Amour Sauvage, which was half produced just me with a camera because there's not even sound. with the actors, and then the other half is more produced with like a producer coming in and a little crew because we had to get extras and yeah. But for the part that is just me with the camera and actors, I think these things are they bring something to the picture that the huge crew and a shooting schedule wouldn't bring.
Yeah, I think so too. You get more of an intimacy to it or something.
Yeah, you get closer. You get a certain face of someone who maybe wouldn't show it in a different environment.
And isn't part of the work of this? I mean, especially you know in that early film Japan, when it goes to 50 festivals or more, that's also a lot of work on your part in terms of applying to all these festivals, isn't it? That seems to be a big part of. No,
I didn't. Back then, I didn't apply. I applied to Locarno. I applied to Cannes, didn't get in. I applied to Locarno, got in. And then I only, it was like I was lucky. I mean, it was a hit. Like, I would only answer. And then you know what I mean? Like, they would ask me for something and I would send it. And I wouldn't even pay. I would tell them, I don't pay your fees. If you want it, you can look at it. And then to the MoMA, I did send it. It was the only North American Film Festival. I was like, this looks like a cool program. I should try. But none of the rest, I think. It was all the rest came from that. So, a lot, yeah. So, basically, But it was a lot of work, to take care of the... I remember I had these, like, long documents with all the print copy, how it goes around and all of that stuff. Some films now I have a sales company for some of them, and I have a distribution company in Germany for a lot of the short films and the long films that take care of the festival distribution, but it's not for all of them, and it's always, yeah, so there's always that, yeah. It's always
And so now, are you still funding all of the films? Do you do other work to fund the films?
now I'm in America. It's so hard to get money here. I work a little bit here, and then I work a little bit, and then I use the money for that. But yeah, but
so you're working.
I'm applying to France.
You're teaching or other jobs?
Yeah, teaching or anything. And sometimes I use residencies as a resource because international residencies. For example, I would go to Korea or Taiwan. They give you a certain infrastructure that you can use that is like a pro bono, because
right.
You get context to the place that you wouldn't necessarily have. And I mean, usually it's not really about equipment; it's more about contacts and infrastructure and stuff like that. And it gives you a back, like it gives you. You say, "I'm doing this project," and it's connected with this residency, so people are more inclined to. Work with you, and now here I'm figuring out, meanwhile doing work with actors and rehearsing and trying out stuff and doing like short tryouts.
And so when the current film you're making is finished, as well as your past films, how do people see them? Can they see them through a certain channel online, or do they have to wait till they are distributed somewhere? How are they seen? How are all your films seen?
Oh, most of them go to festivals. Sometimes I show them at installations. And then I try to have some of them available online, either through like sales companies and distribution companies, or even by myself. So I put them on my Vimeo channel, and I try to make sure that some of them are on Amazon. And then there's other companies who also do. But it's, yeah, so it's usually festivals, and then sometimes the art scene, and then, yeah, it's available online in some places.
Well, that's exciting. It's nice.
DVD. Yeah.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Yeah, no, I was like, I'm trying to think where are all the films, and I'm like, some of them are on DVDs, some of them are on that website, whatever. Yeah.
Well, I'll have some links here to your Vimeo channel, so people can see some of them. So let me ask you, Leo, before we go, it's really been great talking to you. What are you reading now? I always ask everybody at the end, a little off topic, but I'm always interested in what you're reading.
My brother sent me a book, Gachar Gachar by Vivek Chandhag. It's a Bangalore writer. It's a really short book, but I just got it like yesterday, so I'm kind of halfway through, and probably today I'll finish it. It's about a family in Bangalore.
Yeah, it's
entertaining. It's fun. It's good.
Well, Lior, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure, and wish you great success with the current project you're working on.
Thank you so much. It was great talking with you, Bernard.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.